For September the 20th, 2013, the air conditioning is on, and it is 2:30 in the morning because I am staying up to order the new iPhone, I guess, something like that. Who knows if I'll succeed, but this explains a lot. I'm editing it while I wait. You're going to hear about announcements from Blizzard and Steam, Payday 2, the heist, and also... let's talk about some physical game swag you might have. Welcome to the 35th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meinsmith.
And you are listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. Ben will be joining us here pretty quick. He got delayed at work. All of us presume that that is a lie, a filthy lie, of the worst sort. He is actually playing Grand Theft Auto V. I'm assured of it. And we will put his feet to the fire. I'm stoking it right now.
That's actually a new mechanic in Grand Theft Auto V.
Yes. Oh man. So before we give like the summary of what's going to happen here, I'd like to make a quick film recommendation. The World's End.
Oh, Simon Pegg?
Yeah. It's really fucking good.
I've been meaning to go see it. It's good.
Which one's this?
It is the one about the pub crawl.
Yes, that looks so amazing.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. It is. I went to see it over the weekend with my brother. And it is really, really good. To say why I like it would ruin the twist, and I went into it knowing absolutely nothing, and I would like to afford other people the same the same courtesy or the same nice ability. I'm not going to reveal too much about it except to say it is a proper follow-up to both Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, both movies I also really enjoyed.
Nice.
Simon Pegg plays a really good degenerate.
Yeah. That he does.
Yeah, Nick Frost plays a good straight man. It's actually a nice little inversion of what they usually do. But this isn't a podcast about movies. I just want to get that out of the way first. This is a podcast about video games. We got some news. We got some plans. We got some. We're talking about some physical game goods. So why don't we get right to it? It's time for The Brief, where we talk about video game news and such. Does anybody have something they want to volunteer?
Yeah, I've got one that's less of a news story and more of a just thing people should see.
Okay. Is it The World's End?
Yeah, I want to come back to that. I know it's been a bit since we... No, I just put it into the robot. But basically, there is this really, really cool thing going on where video games are getting mashed up with the ancient art of Japanese wood printing. And several of these images have been making their rounds on the internet. And it is the most badass thing I've ever seen. Let's see.
This will be in the show notes. Yeah. That is duckfeed.tv/LVL/35.
Yes.
But
it's, I guess, a collaboration between Jed Henry and David Bull. And it just basically takes a lot of, you know, popular, familiar video game characters and puts them into this really, really iconic Japanese wood printing style. And it's just, you kind of have to see it to understand the effect. But you'll instantly recognize the style. And then you'll kind of, after looking at it for a couple of seconds, recognize the video games that it's from. And it's just really, really creative and really cool.
Yeah, it's a very fun exercise to see like what you recognize here. I like the Pokemon one. The Metroid one is fantastic.
And I think there's two Metroid ones, and both of them are just great.
Yeah. No, the Sonic one is pretty good.
Yeah. So, go look at it. Maybe we'll even drop the link on the Facebook page or something like that. But really cool. And I think it's one of the most kind of fun things to see is when you take familiar things and put them through different art styles. That's one of the things that I really enjoyed about Homestar Runner back in the day was they had this kind of base cast of characters and then had all these different, you know, variants or art styles for them.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool to see that, you know, I've seen like, you know, obviously you've got the cosplays of video game characters and kind of real life shots, and then you know, the cute cartoony versions, and now you've got the Japanese wood printing style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I, you know, all of this falls under fan art, the vast majority of which is execrable.
There are no visible dicks or boobs.
Yeah,
no
My Little Pony versions of Samus.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing like that. Man, I've been following the...
Although I do think Mega Man is topless in this, just saying.
Yeah, you might be right, oh man, Fox Moon, that's so good. I think the Star Fox one might be my favorite. I need to close this, or else I'm gonna be here all day.
So just whenever you got a couple minutes, check it out. It's cool.
On Something Awful, every once in a while there pops up a thread of like re-envision video game covers or video game posters.
I've seen those.
Yeah, like in a real minimalistic, like 1960s Stanley Kubrick film poster kind of look.
Yeah,
or
yeah,
like novel covers, and those are all really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I had
good
the when I was in Huntsville, the local like artist colony or whatever you call it, had a festival that was the Grumpy Cat Festival. You've seen that meme?
Yeah.
And so all of the artists there, whatever their medium was, they did a piece of art at. I think the most epic was there's a guy there who did like stained glass, but we're talking like the church window, like, you know, depicting a scene from the Bible, like that style stained glass. So it was like this expertly done stained glass like depiction of Grumpy Cat as like a medieval knight, and somehow like Sir Grumps-a-Lot or something.
Yeah,
nice.
As you do. Yeah.
Yeah.
My so a bunch of people that I work with went to the Cincinnati Comic Con and displayed art, and like the nice part is we have a bunch of it hanging up around the office, and if you want you can buy some of it. I bought a poster. It's like a nice like text treatment of my favorite quote from the Avengers, which is my secret is that I'm always angry. it's like a 17 by 19 poster of that, so I need to get it framed and put up somewhere. It looks really cool. And then there's also one another coworker of mine did called the X Presidents, which just X and then dash presidents. And it's four of the former presidents as X-Men. So it's Abraham Lincoln with Cyclops glasses on. It's George Washington with Wolverine hair. there's FDR as Xavier. Nice. I forget what the fourth one is, but it's really good. I generally don't like crossover fan fiction, or not fan fiction, but fan art that much. This is comic book / history, so I think it's a little bit excusable to a certain degree. But yeah.
That's awesome. David just showed the picture of what he was talking about. Like I said, it's like a very easy way to do some fun creative stuff.
Oh yeah.
I won't pretend it's like, you know, high art or whatever, but really just, you know, appreciate it for what it is, and it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I've been to Dragon Con. There's a lot of highness involved. A lot of
Cool. So I'm gonna go ahead. Picking between two of them. I think one is more significant than the other, and I think David, you might pick the other one. So this is relatively old news. It was announced before last week's episode came out, but we're time shifted, so what? Deal with it. Steam announced and is beta testing its sharing program or lending program.
Oh, right, yeah.
Have you guys seen this? Have you heard about this?
No, actually, I missed that, which...
Yeah, so the way that this works out, you have up to 10 trusted people, friends or family or whatnot, and they get complete access to your library, unlimited. They can play the game and beat it, only if games opt into it, obviously. And so like if I'm sitting here, one of you guys was like, man, I'd really like to play Amnesia and the Machine for Pigs, but I don't know if I want to spend $20 on it. Oh, Cole has it, so I can sign in, I can see his library, you play it, and then you just get kicked off if I start playing that game.
Nice.
Yeah. Huh. so, So, like, it's supposed to be like a digital equivalent of lending somebody your disc. There's a little bit of ambiguity around it, and obviously, it depends on publisher. It depends on publisher participation. I think the biggest thing that I like, my biggest question is they say like you share your library, and it's you get kicked off if they're on your library. So, like, if I'm playing Amnesia and somebody else decides to play like Gunpoint or something, or, you know, if you're playing Gunpoint and I sign in to play Amnesia, will it knock you off of that if you're playing a different game? So can it just be that neither of us are playing the same game at the same time, or neither of us are playing any game at the same time?
Yeah. That could create some real funky etiquette where it's like, man, I really want to play Saints Row 4 and I own it, but I know if I log on to it right now, I'm going to kick my friend off. Maybe I better send him a text and give him a heads up, just make sure he can... you know, save. Or,
well, the insidious part about it and why Steam is comfortable doing this, I think, is because when you get kicked off, like, you know, you have like 5 minutes, like a little pop up says, hey, you know, you're about ready to get dumped. Maybe save or find a stopping point or whatever. And then it gives you an option to either quit yourself or buy the game yourself. So it's like, hey, you know, you like playing this game. Do you want to not have this stupid thing happen? Just buy it, you dummy. So. I don't know. I think that's cool. I could see that being useful for like us, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're definitely right, Dennis. There could be some weird etiquette around it if that is in fact the case. At which point, you know, I think the borrower recognizes that you know, they're, you know, borrowing a thing, you know, and not just drunkenly stealing it, or no, not just stealing it from their friend while they're drunk.
Oh, I was also drunkenly stealing it.
I suppose.
There's a whole lot of drunkenness going on.
There was. Who really can remember what happened or who stole what from who? It was just so long ago.
There's physical evidence. You have Saints Row the Third and I don't.
Well, in the metaphysical sense, who really owns anything? You know, shouldn't we all just try to stave off this illusion of possession of, I'm sorry, dude, I can't do this.
Yeah.
No. I stole it.
You can't. Yeah.
If I ever see you in person, I will give it back. Yeah. I just never see you in person, even though we're like 15 minutes apart, which needs to, true. We got to fix that. But
yes. Cole actually has a strict policy that we can never meet with him in person. It has to go all through court. Warriors.
Yeah, you never touch Howie. All right.
I'm just going to wrap it in a brick and throw it through your window. And
wrap it in a brick. Chisel out a brick case for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Yep, so I think that looks real neat. Who knows? David, how about you? You got a story for me?
Yeah, a little bit minor, but I think it's kind of cool. Blizzard has announced that they're getting rid of the auction house in Diablo 3.
I spotted it. I called it.
Yep.
Nice.
So I think this is actually really interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think it's interesting that a company is able or is willing to say this straight up that we basically screwed it up and we're just going to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, though, is I think this will make the game an a lot better game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is the game balanced around not having readily accessible items, you know, for your character? Like that.
Yes, because, and no.
So like my understanding was you just got a bunch of loot and it assumed that if it didn't fit you, you would just sell it to get whatever you needed to buy stuff that actually would.
See, the problem with it is the game's all about loot. That's basically what Diablo is about.
Yeah.
And you get you always have a bunch of loot. And what this basically did is there's so many people playing it that what you have is always what someone else has, and what someone else has is and what someone else has is always what, you know, you want.
Yeah.
So in effect you always have exactly what you want without any effort. So like it was basically never in my best interest when I was playing the game to be like, I found these loot items, and you know, I'm gonna think about what the pros and cons of this, and you know, oh, this isn't exactly the stats I want, but it has this advantage. Is it worth it? Mm-hmm. The answer was always, it doesn't have exactly what I want. Sell and buy exactly what I want.
Yeah. As opposed to just playing enough until you got the thing that you wanted.
Right, yeah. So it was one of those weird things where, I read some, some people online saying, they didn't really like and kind of that they're getting rid of it. And saying, if you feel like that's a problem, just don't buy from the auction house.
Mm-hmm.
Which I can respect, but it's one of those things where it's just... it just doesn't work,
Yeah, it's still there. Like, and the game, for better or worse, was probably still designed with that in mind,
Right.
Yeah. So I want to read their quote around it because I think it's really interesting. They said, this is Blizzard's production director, John Hite. It became increasingly clear that despite the benefits of the auction house system and the fact that many players around the world use it, it ultimately undermines Diablo's core gameplay. Kill monsters to get cool loot. With that in mind, we want to let everyone know that we've decided to remove the gold and real money auction house system from Diablo 3. I'm surprised at this, that they're removing both of them. I figured if there was going to be anything that would go, it would just be the real money one.
Sure.
Just because that, I think, has like a more poisonous effect, for lack of a better word, like that, kind of makes it, pay to win or something like that.
See, I would actually say, though, in terms of practice, I think it's the other way around.
Really?
I think the core problem with it, it's not a competitive game, really.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can maybe PvP, but that's not the point. And so someone else having cool gear because they bought it really doesn't matter.
Right.
On the other hand, most people aren't going to buy gear, but everyone is going to have gold to spend in the gold auction house.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, actually, I think the gold auction house is the more harmful of the two.
Yeah, so it's like the rich get richer. The only reason I say that the real money one is different is just because I always get a little bit weird about somebody's actual wealth in the real world affecting their ability to play a game. I mean, aside from their ability to purchase and maintain the machine that plays it and also buy the game. I mean...
But I mean, rich people can buy VIP passes to baseball games, and they can pay for luxury vacations.
I don't see how that what that has to do. Like, I would like to believe that there is an inherent meritocracy to games that is not specifically related to your disposable income, but. Like David said, it's not competitive, so really it's just their own experience that they're that they're altering by it. I just think that it was a really weird decision in the first place for them to have it. So
yeah, it does strike me as being weird. I will say the one thing that's too bad about it is, I guess, especially in like the previous game in the series, Diablo 2, like. There were builds that were entirely built around having certain pieces, certain very specific pieces of equipment. Mm-hmm. Like, that's mm-hmm. the only way the build would work. That's the whole point of choosing these skills. And so I feel like the one thing that is too bad about this is once you do get to the end game, I felt like the auction house was kind of a low stress way of ensuring that when it's, this truly is the only single one piece of equipment that will work,
mm-hmm.
that you have access, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I see Ben's on, so I'm going to add him on while I make this point. Like my contention, but my understanding, and it's an incomplete understanding because I never really played a lot of Diablo 2 and played even less of Diablo 3. But like Diablo 2's economy was like fucked, like fucked through and through because of, eventually gold became meaningless. And for a while, until duping became a thing, you know, Stones of Jordan, you know, were the de facto currency of the realm, right? So
that's
like how do they maintain their economy, you know, in what is essentially a single player game where they can't do things like in World of Warcraft with, like, you know, money sinks and things like that.
Actually, they added in a sink. I don't remember exactly, but I believe it's with the cube, the Herodric cube, which was basically like their crafting system.
Mm-hmm.
They made this Stone of Jordan be a crafting component for some things. I think maybe it was something along the lines of like very, very high-end gambling, where it was like, you know, you do this recipe with this Stone of Jordan, and it would always give some like ultra epic level gear, but it might not be exactly what you wanted or something. And the other thing they did is, and I don't remember the specifics, but they did some sort of thing where when a certain number of the Stone of Jordans were sold, it triggered, or something.
Yeah.
It triggered some world event that was kind of like the basically, like, there's one, it was like fight all three bosses at once, and then they dropped like exclusive weapon or item or something.
It triggered some world event where a wizard cast a spell called Dissolve Gold in order to deflate the economy. Hey, Ben.
Hey.
Hey, welcome. Welcome aboard. We're midstream. So
I was going to say, I'm terribly sorry for being late. Work was not fun, so I'm having a liquid dinner tonight.
Okay. On an empty stomach. That is advisable. Yeah. So, oh, okay. Well, don't you know, thank you for showing up.
Yeah. Sorry for my tardiness.
That's cool. I won't make you do a brief unless you absolutely want to.
You know, it's funny. Today, Grand Theft Auto 5 came out, and I don't have a story about Grand Theft Auto 5.
I know. Your reign of terror is over.
I suppose so.
Yeah.
No!
The Grind. It's time for The Grind, where we talk about games that we have been playing. David, you asked if you could go first, so I will let you.
Yeah, I actually picked up a new game yesterday. It's you know, game all about, you know, shooting lots and lots of cops and gangsters.
You're stealing this from Ben.
And you know, stealing a whole bunch of money and having epic getaways. And by that, I, of course, mean I finally got Payday 2.
Oh, okay.
Curveball.
I was about ready to stop you. I was like, Ben's been waiting to do this forever. I was heartbroken for you, Ben.
The Arrested Development music was playing in my head. Yeah. And by that, I mean the Charlie Brown music. Okay. But, you know. Yeah.
that Lenny Kravitz song was playing, you know, American Woman.
You've kind of been playing around with like getting this for a while now.
Yes, you have.
Yeah, I really liked the original Playdate 2.
At work, somebody misspoke and said the pediatric table of elements. I was just coming up with elements that would be on that. The only two that spring to mind right now are Adventureton and Disnight.
So, it's night.
I had like 20 of them going.
Phineum and Ferb.
Phineum. Yeah.
I was just thinking of dangly balls.
What? Why?
That's what old people are. Oh, wait, no, pediatrics. Never
yeah,
mind.
No, not, Jerry, sorry, not the geriatric
table. Never mind.
Although we could probably do... You could probably do the
geriatric table.
The geriatric table.
Dangly balls like kids would not be a good thing.
the Lindy Hoppium. Social security gin. The geriatric table of elements.
That's the element that just self-destructs the second anyone tries to access it.
Yeah.
Political humor, that's about as much as you'll get on this show.
But political humor, that is an element on the geriatric table of elements.
Yeah.
So tell us about Payday, David.
Sure.
Pay David.
Yeah, well, I really love the original, and I feel like this was a really good example of a time when, you know, the original was probably a little bit of a surprise success. You know, it was, you know, pretty small, you know, small studio, you know, kind of an indie game, but, you know, sold a ton of copies, even though the gameplay itself was simple. And it seems like they really took the money and, to be blunt, and also the experience from that. And kind of Payday 2 is sort of what we wanted Payday 1 to be, but now have the resources to do.
Okay.
So it's much more, you know, the original game, it was basically all shooting all the time, and you know, all of the, almost all of the heists basically involved, like, setting up a drill or a saw to get into, like, a vault, and then, like, defending it, and then escaping.
So it's some shooting, but occasionally you hold A while looking at a thing?
Well, you don't have to actually, like, hold down, it's just running. But okay. You have to basically, it's basically like kind of a survival thing.
Point defense.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Whereas in this one, you start out in what they call like casing mode, where it's basically stealth. Mm-hmm. And so you try to get as far through the heist as you can without being seen. It's, you know, it's impossible actually to complete most of them without ever being seen.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, there's various things that can happen. A security camera can see you. Exactly. Guards can see you if you're wearing like heavy body armor. And you go walking around, like a civilian might see you and call on their cell phone.
Hmm.
And that's actually kind of a cool mechanic, because now it's not just like, you know, you have to actually watch the civilians to make sure they don't cell phone on you.
Right.
When you're...
Who do they call? Do they call the cops?
Yeah, call the cops.
All
yeah.
Right. Just call their friend and be like, dude,
this dude, body armor, dog.
Although, and they also added skill trees. So as an example, one of the abilities is Stockholm Syndrome.
But
so
to be especially charming.
No, so what's one of the classes is basically like the charismatic, you know, kind of the ringleader, you know, mastermind guy. And so if you have that, when you you know, yell at people to, you know, get on the floor, you know, all that stuff, they then won't cell phone in if you're not looking.
They'll immediately identify with you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You scream.
They identify with me as the up and coming underdog fighting against the system.
Dad, I said get back down. No, you misunderstand. I want to help.
No, you scream nobody fucking move, and then you have to gun one of them down because he moved, but he was actually going to make you a sandwich.
Aww.
Yeah, I know, right? It's tragic. He just wanted to be loved.
So, yeah.
If I had only known, I would have gunned him down after he brought me the sandwich.
See, but actually, one of the other elements they added that's really cool is now the heists are much more complex. Some of mm-hmm. them are multiple day. And so, for example, if in the first day you kill a lot of civilians, the police response in subsequent days will be much greater.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and similarly, there's a random chance when you you know, get to your getaway vehicle, that the police will catch up with you, particularly if you've killed a crap ton of civilians, and then you'll have to do this kind of bonus level survival thing where you survive until a new getaway vehicle can get to you. So it's really cool. There's a lot more variety. I did a mission where basically someone didn't pay their protection money, so you just have to go in and like smash up a mall. So that's kind of fun.
That is a nice concept that you say, hey, pay me to stop me from doing this to you.
Yeah. Just a protection racket, right?
Yeah, because after all, you know, the government doesn't, you know, say, hey, pay me so that my cops will protect you. If you don't, we'll put you in jail. Sorry.
Oh, man. Okay, so wait a minute. Like, correct me if I'm wrong. I heard that there is a heist in Payday where you are trying to steal $100,000 for a big score, and then one of your guys, you know, fucks up because he's a Butterfingers, but you get away in the end, and everybody snickers as you make off with the loot.
That doesn't narrow it down.
I followed that.
Okay. All right.
Did I miss something?
That sentence was almost entirely
Snickers, Butterfingers. What else is there?
Oh, okay.
Score.
Okay.
A big score.
Big score is a candy bar?
Well, it's a score bar.
I've never heard of that before.
It's like rice and stuff.
Yes. Yeah. It's real weird. Hershey's makes it, but it's like weird old person candy. So that contributed nothing.
I appreciated it.
Yeah.
The one thing that did disappoint me, though, is I haven't been able to get a group yet. They have a Breaking Bad-inspired heist.
Where, what is it?
Apparently, you're trying, instead of, you know, doing the normal, like, you know, drilling through vaults and stuff like that, you're trying to cook meth while... The cops are attempting to kick down the door, and if you do it, if you screw up, just the place explodes.
That's pretty good. Real quick intermission. I'm going to let you finish, David. However, Ben, Breaking Bad, yeah. You caught up?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Everybody called. We have like a death pool. I think I told you about this. We have a death pool at work.
You can't not call that one, though.
Well, I guess not. I mean, 9/10 of the people on the death pool called that one. So.
Yeah. Okay. Dennis, how are you on? How are you fixed for Breaking Bad?
I have been strapped for time, so I have not progressed past the last episode I told you guys about.
Okay. Cool.
I am ashamed. I am excited to view more. I just need the time.
I understand that, David.
And my grind entries have not been helping.
Oh yeah.
Random side note: does the lead of Breaking Bad wear some sort of hat or something?
Yeah, it's the Heisenberg hat. It's like a pork pie.
Okay, just because apparently found my favorite hat store, I guess, makes it. But I just went to the website, and they have, like, Breaking Bad stuff all over the place. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, back to Payday. I'm sorry.
No problem. So, I don't know, a couple other interesting things. It's now no crosshairs, which is kind of cool.
Is it just iron sights?
Yeah, it's iron sights, and apparently it has like a snap-to-aim system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, I don't know, I feel like this is some weird world where now PC games have auto-aim. I sort of like that. I'm not a huge fan of, like, the Red Orchestra. You know, like, let's make everything ultra, ultra realistic.
Mm-hmm.
But I do kind of like the Killing Floor, like, hey, no iron sights.
Right.
Wait, what is Red Orchestra? Is this another game?
It's a game made by the people who made Killing Floor, actually.
Yeah.
But it's a hyper realistic World War II game.
Okay.
So, like, if you get in a tank, you can only see, like, the little tiny field of view out of the periscope.
Gotcha. Right. I was really hoping you were going to say it's an ultra realistic orchestra simulator.
it's like Wii Music. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's really, really cool. I still feel, I don't know, a little weird playing a game where you just mass murder cops.
Yeah.
What, you like, got a problem with that?
In light of recent events.
I don't know recent events. What happened?
The shooting at the naval yard yesterday.
I only heard this in passing. I do not know the details.
Yeah, I don't know too many details either. But just psychos, mass shooting. You know, they're just a monthly occurrence now. So,
But yeah, it's not to go on this tangent, but it's I don't know, it's weird to me. Just like at least GTA has a storyline.
Oh
like,
yeah, where it's not just.
They kind of justify it, sort of. Kind of. But, I don't know. Either way, it's kind of funny playing a game where your characters are just blatant, like mass murders. I mean, it's kind of weird. But, really good game.
I was going to say, is the fact that they're mass murderers ever reflected in their character? Like...
Not really.
Like, or is it like Army of Two, where it's like, yeah, bro, we just killed some people.
Yeah, it's more that. I mean, it's... I don't know. I mean, the game does a good job in that you're very much... You're not supposed to kill civilians. Like, that's never a good idea. It's... You're actually punished fairly severely for it. On the other hand, it maybe kind of forgets that police officers are also innocent people.
Yeah. And the police also don't take kindly to you shooting police officers as well.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Or just, you know, shooting them for doing their job. You know.
Not cool.
Not cool. I think in general we can all agree.
We can agree that shooting people is not cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're making some bold stances here on the podcast.
It's a tough place to be because, like, you know, I can understand this is simply the dressing that best, you know, fits the mechanics of the game, right? And so, you know, it just from a, hey, this is the setup of the game and the objectives, so shooting cops is part of that, and it's, you know, nothing personal. It's not trying to make a statement about cops are bad. That's just how it's a heist game, just like, you know, there are heist movies, so that's going to be part of it. But still, it's like, you know, how would I feel if I was talking to someone who didn't traditionally play games and was trying to tell them about Payday 2 and said, oh yeah, you do all this shooting at cops. I'm trying to think of a way to bring that up or a way to explain it that doesn't leave me feeling a little bad about it, so, or a lot bad about it, you know?
This is going to be a false equivalence, but like, I... Cops and Robbers, playing that as a kid, right. Or you know, yeah, Cops and Robbers specifically, like this is just that, except instead of a little kid's imagination and people falling over with X's on their eyes or whatever, you know, like, oh, bang, bang, haha, you know, glorifying that. I don't even know if kids still play that. I may sound like I just grew up in the 50s. I almost said, you know, I literally almost said Cowboys and Indians, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like...
Have you ever seen a game of Cops and Robbers where all the cops explicitly die?
I'm sure it's
happened, but you know, that's generally you're acting out the fantasy as a kid of the good guys winning. And I also thought about it in context of, you know, watching a gangster movie, right? Mm-hmm. But generally that has some greater subtext where, you know, you understand that the characters are doing horrible things, but there's some redemptive quality, if not about the characters, then the lesson you can learn from watching what they do. Yeah. Whereas, I don't know about this with Payday, David, you kind of said there is no greater story. What's the redemptive quality of shooting all these cops? What do you get from that? Again, how would I explain this to someone who's not familiar with video games that they would say, oh, okay, well, you know, I could understand why you'd have fun with that.
Could I jump in?
Sure.
'cause I haven't played the game, so I cannot. I have no information about it. But what I'm thinking it might be like is, or what I'm thinking it should be like, is like Hitman, except instead of your mission being killing a target, is to rob a bank, you know? Mm-hmm. And sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if the game's like this or not, but I could see getting behind a game like that where, yeah, like the idea of, I don't know, casing a joint or trying to figure out, like, the weaknesses of a place and exploit that. Like, I see that more of, like, a chess match or a puzzle than I would, like, a like, hey, let's go shoot a bunch of people sort of thing, you know?
Yeah. Or like, see, the other... Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I feel like, you know, Hitman, you know, was kind of the game I thought of in comparison. And I feel like the difference is that in Hitman, you know, one, pretty much every time, I was trying to think of if there were any instances where the person you're trying to kill doesn't deserve it. At least all of them I've done in the games. This would be mainly Hitman 2, a little bit of Hitman 3. All the people basically deserved it. But the other thing is, you know, in Hitman, if you do your job anything approaching right, you don't kill either any innocent people or very few. Whereas in this game, pretty much, like, unless you're really, really good, like, you know, good enough to be making YouTube videos of yourself, you kill lots of cops.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's more just the, kind of like you say, there's not that narrative where, you know, it's not the gangster movie where it's like, we're killing gangsters and dirty cops. And it's, some of it, it's just weird because it kind of tries to do this element where, like, oh, the, like, a number of the heists are like, we steal something for a dirty politician and then use that to blackmail that politician to get his money. So it's kind of like a stick it to the man type of thing. Mm-hmm. But it's like, yes, but you killed literally 200 police officers in the course of doing this.
Yeah.
200 less guilty police officers than the one politician, I imagine, too.
Right, exactly.
So what I'm arriving at is that, like, the theme doesn't matter for this.
Right.
And because of that, it can be seen as gratuitous if you are not comfortable in this day and age playing a game that is literally all about shooting cops.
Right, and I think that's what it straight up comes down to is it's a game that's not at all about that.
Right.
It's just, you know, the point of the game is to be a heist movie. It's just the problem is in a heist movie, you know, it's a movie, so everything works right. So, you know, you don't end up with just a bloodbath. Because, you know, your awesome plan actually works. Whereas in a video game, it's about action. You know, it's the same thing with just, like, in your average James Bond movie, you know, he kills maybe, like, 10 people. Whereas in a James Bond video game, you kill just, like, hundreds. You know, it's right. The same thing.
Yeah. And I think there's a level of scaling there that, you know, I'm totally willing to accept, which is just like, hey, this is a shooter. The main mechanic is shooting, so there's going to be a lot more deaths. And I'm not arguing about deaths in the game. I think, I guess the point is, regardless of how many deaths there are, it's still shooting, you know, cops, police officers. And without a... And again, like, I totally acknowledge you can play this game, you can enjoy it for what it is, and, you know, it's not like for some reason you're shooting cops in a video game that's going to have an effect on you. We're adults, we can understand the difference there.
Right.
But as I just think about, you know, starting to maybe demand more from games or, you know, to hold them to the same standard that I would hold other mediums, I have trouble justifying that. Maybe you could come at it from the angle of someone plays Payday 2 and says, oh man, you know, what it would take to rob a bank is to kill a lot of innocent people who are just trying to do their jobs. That, you know, I realize on a level I didn't before how horrible that would be. Or, You know, it's not like the heist movies where everything goes off without a hitch. There's a lot of innocent people that would die. And I have a new appreciation or, understanding of how ugly this really is versus the stylized heist movie version. But it doesn't feel like there's that level of intention behind it. It's, yeah. It's like they said, hey, shooting cops is the main mechanic. Yeah, it doesn't sit quite right, but video games, so deal with it.
Yeah.
This sounds like it's an example of them not doing the kind of cover your ass sort of move that like Modern Warfare 2 did and that Hitman does, where it's like, it seems like they don't give you the option where you can not kill anybody in any given mission, you know?
I mean, theoretically, you can. It's just crazy, crazy hard.
Okay.
Yeah,
but
and again, the pretend shooting cops to be able to enjoy an entertainment experience. You know, there's probably a point where that equation evens out. And okay, yeah, I want to be able to enjoy this game, and I'm willing to put up with the fact that I'm pretend shooting cops, and knowing, you know, being able to make the delineation between pretend and real. I can deal with that and enjoy the game. That's fine. I think just, you know, that it could have made the game better if there was a more believable or intrinsic reason for it.
Not every game needs to make a statement. Okay, so not every game needs to make a statement. I recognize that there can exist such a thing as just the dumb shooter, and that is perfectly fine for me. However, this game, in not making a statement or just being like, hey, dude, it's just a game, they're still presenting this thing that a large number of people can either find objectionable or just be like, yeah, you know what? Nah, I'm not too terribly into that as an aesthetic. And like, just its subject matter in and of itself is saying something.
Right.
About that choice, which really it's down to this slurry of subjectivity, which is just kind of like, oh, you know, if it's not for you, then don't play it. Cool. But yeah.
And I will say, I mean, it is a really, really good game. I'm not, you know, trying to take away from that. I'm just saying, like, playing it feels weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if it feels weird in a way that, like, not having played it, so I'm speaking as if I did play it. I have not, but the fact that we're having this conversation, I don't know that I would have had this conversation about Grand Theft Auto Vice City,
right.
if it was today instead of 10 years ago, or B, just in general because of where things were at that point.
Well, you know, there's another thing here too, where it's like, you know, you could play like a Ninja Gaiden game and you also murder a ton of people, but like no one would probably see that as too objectionable, right? Because it's like you're never going to be a ninja. Or same thing with like Mass Effect, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I guess if somebody's like really gung-ho about just the idea of shooting people, that's not good. But like, I don't know. It seems like people don't give the same sort of slack to a game like this that they would other games because it's set in a real world, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it's just as innocuous as those other games, you know?
And I recognize how weird it sounds for me as somebody who's such a huge fan of Saints Row, where, again, it's not really saying anything except like, hey, let's do this thing that we think is funny and we hope that you think it's funny too. And, you know, you can kill tons of innocent people, but for some reason it doesn't register for me like this one, probably because it's cartoony.
Yeah.
It's all about that polygon count.
Yeah, or just its aesthetic, its tone, something.
Yeah.
But it's intentional, I would say. Yeah. Like there's a, hey, this is going to be a slapstick, over-the-top Grand Theft Auto send-up. And that coming with that is, you know, civilian casualties.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, still tenuous. But you know, there is a justification there. I'm sure, you know, you spend too much time thinking about this and everything becomes horrible and you start, you know, getting into an existential crisis and then you weep in a corner for a while. So, you know, overthinking is what we do here, but,
what else are we going to do for several hours a week?
Yeah. just it's just interesting because I feel like we're getting to the point where we can start asking more of games. And again, mm-hmm. not to condemn games like Payday 2, but just to start looking at it with the eye and saying, huh, wouldn't it have been great if there was even another layer to it?
All right.
Yep.
I don't know. Do you have anything else to say about, Payday?
No, although I did actually have one other quick game.
Okay.
Ooh.
Have you seen Card Hunter at all?
Card Hunter? No.
Yes. This game, actually, I think you'd probably love. It's basically, it's free to play. It's a not real time, a turn-based strategy game, sort of like Ogre Battle or Ogre Tactics or whatever, or like a Final Fantasy Tactics, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception that you draw cards each round that tell you what actions you then play those cards over the course of your round, going back and forth with your opponent in order to move and attack and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the real. The way that's set up, there's just a lot of real interesting, it's real well put together gameplay mechanics. Mm-hmm. But then from a, kind of metagame thing, the cool twist they have is that the equipment you equip your character with changes out the cards.
Okay.
So, like a given piece of equipment might have like 5 cards associated with it, and so it'll change out, those 5 cards in the deck. So, for example, the boot equipment slot, generally speaking, will give you cards that allow your character to move.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you equip, say, some like really heavy plate boots, it might, half of them might no longer be movement cards, but now they're armor cards.
Mm-hmm.
One of the interesting things is a lot of the equipment, a couple of the cards are explicitly harmful to your character.
Huh.
They might be like, every spell you cast damages you one. So you have to consider, are the rest of the cards, worth the fact that I'm inserting actually harmful cards into my deck. So it's really cool mechanic, really, really solid gameplay. The other thing I really like is it's entirely presented straight up in the kind of set up at that you're at your friend's house playing this game with him being the dungeon master.
Okay.
Huh.
Like to the point where like halfway through one of the adventures, one of the dungeons, the pizza delivery comes and the dungeon master then proceeds to have a couple lines of dialogue where he awkwardly tries to flirt with the delivery girl.
Okay.
Or like the dungeon master's older brother, who's the guy who actually owns the game, will like come down, like criticize his dungeon mastering and like explain how things are supposed to be, and oh, this game isn't dumbed down for the masses and stuff. It's really, really endearing.
Hmm.
So
yeah, I'm interested. It's like browser based. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, and it's a good game. Seems like they've got a really good free to play model. Basically, you can sign up for a membership, and every time an equipment drops, there's a second equipment drop that you only get if you're a member.
Hmm.
So.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. So.
Neat. Hey, Ben, tell me about Grand Theft Auto 5.
So, can I vent a little bit? Just a little bit.
You may.
All right. I don't know. I had a not a fantastic day at work. But anyway, So I was postponed, and I was late to the podcast, but I made two stops on the way home. One was to get beer, and the other was to get Grand Theft Auto V.
Okay.
Oh. And so it is waiting.
Dude, I feel terrible.
It's all right. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
It's one of those things. It's a game that's so long. It's not like people are reviewing this and saying, like, oh, yeah, that was a great story. It's like, oh, hey, yeah, I started it, and it seems like it's really cool. So, it, you know, it's whatever. I'm not planning on beating this in a night, so.
I would be impressed if you beat it at night.
I would...
I would be surprised sad. if you didn't have the whole the main story beat by the next episode.
What? You're going to be surprised then.
Oh, okay.
I'm a completionist. I'll like stop.
The main story.
I'll stop
though.
And do all the. I know, but you know, like I stop and take all the photographs or get all the oysters or whatever.
Yeah. Smell the roads.
Smell the prostitutes. Gross.
Smell the roses. Kill the hobos.
Jeez. Jeez.
Well, I mean, they were getting all over your roses. What were you going to do?
Oh, well. Well, I didn't mean to provoke you with that question. I was just curious if you... the timeline didn't work.
I do not feel provoked at all. Okay. No, it's all good, dude.
Yeah. Well, have you been playing anything in the meantime? I mean...
I thought about this. I do not think I've played a single game between now and last week.
Oh, okay.
So, my apologies.
Huh.
I've been.
Yeah, you don't need to apologize to me. I'm pretty much the same. So
can I make a preconceived joke?
Sure, if you want.
Cool. How have you liked the game Amnesia, or have you forgotten?
I have not played it yet. So
that's a terrible joke.
Was that karma?
No, I think it might have been. you know, so I very, very similarly, I haven't played anything. I went home this past weekend to spend time with the family and whatnot, and and consequently didn't have time to like sit down and really absorb Amnesia like I would want to. And you know, life in general is real busy. So the game I've looked forward to the most this year, haven't played it yet too much aside from just to see that it runs. So I'm not bitter about that at all. But if Ben's not bitter about not being able to play Grand Theft Auto V like right now, I can't be bitter about not having played Amnesia. So because
it's the not bitter podcast.
Yeah, not that I'm angry. Yeah,
episode 35, totally not bitter.
We already have a title. So I've written it down.
What's the title so far?
The geriatric table of elements. Yeah. So, oh man. But there is one game that I've played that is real neat. I'd played around with it a little bit up until this point, but then I just went and beat it. It's called Black Bar. It's for iOS. It is a very simple game. It is just text, and you are reading these letters from a friend that somebody has sent to you. You're in like a 1984-esque Soviet bloc nation where there is like a bureau of like censorship and whatever. And as you're reading these letters and trying to figure out what they're saying, there are black bars, like where stuff has been redacted. And the purpose of the game is to fill in what words would be there. So it starts out real easy, like saying, you know, blank your name. You're like, okay, dear. You try that. And then when it turns from black to yellow, you know that you are proceeding.
Is this game like one big Rorschach blot? Or
kind of. I mean, it's you know, obviously it gets a little bit more difficult as it goes along. And there are not multiple situations there are not multiple solutions. Like most of the time there is a specific word that they're looking for, and even a substitute wouldn't I think that there's only one instance, and I don't want to spoil it, but there is a class of word that it's just like any of those, so it's like a conditional statement or a real expression or something. I don't know. Fuck. I don't know computers. But
Sounds like this is kind of the aftermath of Papers, Please.
A little bit, yeah. Like there's this glut of game content that is based on like weird 80s era Soviet bloc kind of like Red Scare kind of stuff, which is very strange.
present era, you know, Iran.
Yeah, true. Like any of that, like any kind of oppression. A lot of games about government oppression. But it is really good. I would recommend you play it. It's not terribly difficult, and it's not terribly long, but it's also not terribly expensive, and it is a very well-written game/experience, and I would recommend it for anybody.
Nice.
For anybody?
Actually, yeah. That did sound like actually it would be a lot of fun.
Graphics 10 out of 10. The font is Courier. I like Courier.
So. Not a huge Courier.
How cool would that be as a psychology test, though, is to do a game like that where you have to kind of guess what word goes in the blank.
Yeah.
And just be able to see the pool of submissions for what people would associate.
Well, then we just become like a Mad Lib, like, dear dick butt.
Oh, yeah, I guess people would game it.
I had lunch with Weed Lord Boner Hitler today. But
that's kind of like, did you ever see the XKCD, the experiment they ran for, like, what colors do people recognize?
Yep. Yeah.
So, yeah, they just showed, like, you know, had a poll you could do, and they just showed, I mean, just tons and tons of different colors, and then tracked what were, you know, what were the most common differences between male and female response. Stuff like that. But some of the funny ones were there were actually a couple where, like, the statistically most common answers were just weird things like puke for, like, one of the green colors. That was the statistically most common answer.
Wait a minute. So, like, it was just, like, type in what you think this color is? Yeah. I don't know how you would get, like, statistically relevant information out of that, especially with the spread.
I mean, I think regular expressions.
That's what I was looking for, right? Did I say that? Yeah. Did I say regular expressions? Okay, cool. is this pink? Is it salmon? Like, is it looking for stuff like that? Like, because that there's that there's, you know, the stereotype that, you know, a woman will say, you know, it's chartreuse, and a dude will say it's green dog. Like, I would probably say it's chartreuse or lime green. Like, I don't, you know, I think that's pretty reductive to say that, you know, I don't know.
Mm. Yeah. What they found, now I'm actually pulling up here, is that women were slightly more, slightly more names for colors. In particular, they apparently are the only ones who recognize hot pink as being a thing.
Really?
Dennis just linked it, but yeah, you can actually.
Yeah, I will read this in my repose, interesting.
Did one that was fuchsia. Apparently, no one can spell.
Yeah.
Colorblind people are more likely than non-colorblind people to type fuck this or some variant and quit in frustration. Yeah.
Tangent.
That's fine. We are running out of time, though. So, Dennis, I will ask you to round us out.
Yeah. So I've been playing more Rayman Legends, and I just have to call out two levels as just particularly brilliant. The first one is called Quicksand, and basically it's your basic, like, platformer. Hey, water's rising, and you have to climb the tower, right? Only you're just standing on the ground, and the tower is sinking into the quicksand around you. And so, like, you know, it's falling at different speeds, and it creates this weird thing where your mind is reading it as if you're climbing up, but what's really happening is it's all just standing still. And then also, so really most of the level occupies just one screen, but there will be sections where kind of boom, it hits bottom and everything stops falling. Mm-hmm. And you're like, and all of a sudden you hear creak, and like the tower will start falling sideways, like toppling to the right. And it becomes this mad scramble towards the right side of the screen as everything falls down around you. And just, you know, they do all these variations on how the tower could fall into the sand. That's just really creative and really, really fun. And I've never seen it done like that anywhere else. So just the creativity behind it, and then the quality of the execution, perfect. Mm-hmm. The second level is called Castle Rock. And so first off, with all the Rayman games, the music is just kind of integrated in. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's always cute music playing in the background. And if, like, your character's idle animation is always kind of in sync with the beat. And just the entire game feels kind of in rhythm, right? And so you start the level, and it's kind of like that. And then you realize, oh, this is kind of more so like that than the other levels. And then you realize, oh, my God, they're doing a tribute to Black Betty. Where, like, you know, the enemies are, you know, running at you and yelling, and, like, the music starts playing in the background, and it's all, like, a tribute to that song. And it's almost like a Guitar Hero track, platformer style. And it is hilarious and amazing, and just this great little surprise treat at the end of an area. And I hope they do it at the end of every area, because it's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
But if I wasn't in love with the game before, which, hint, I was, I am head over heels in love with it now.
Yeah.
Just the most creative, the funniest, and the most fun that I've had with a platformer.
So this is crazy, because that is the most played out genre, you know, a platformer. Like,
oh,
people have been doing that for, you know, 30 years now. Maybe even more than that. Who knows? I don't really know what year it is or what year platformer started. and also, this is a massive publisher. This is like, it's a massive studio, mm-hmm. you would imagine would stay towards, you know, you imagine that they would be status quo all the way. But they aren't. And in fact, they're doing some of the most interesting stuff with a platformer, like outside of like very specific indie things, which I could cite, which,
yeah, I don't know if you can call this AAA. But if it is, it gives me hope for AAA.
It's published by Ubisoft. It's developed and published by Ubisoft, dude. Like, that's
about as AAA as it gets. Yeah, it's weird to say that, but just, man, is that game a bundle of joy.
It's a little indie film, you know? Like, who distributes you? Paramount.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, does Nolan North voice anyone? I think that's the true measure of whether it's AAA or not.
That's how you get your screaming. Third A.
The third A stands for North.
Yeah. Oh. And then I've also been playing Demon's Souls.
Oh, yeah.
Which people who have listened know that I tried it, got it out from Gamefly, and then rage quit about the Valley of Defilement. Mm-hmm. Didn't get it. The game was stupid. I couldn't beat it quickly. Then I found Dark Souls. Thank you, Cole. Mm-hmm. Then I found Demon's Souls again, and it's like coming to a whole new game. The skills from Dark Souls truly transfer, so mm-hmm. I feel like I was able to jump in with much more aptitude than I had before, and it's been really good. Again, cross plugging the Bonfireside Chat, you guys kind of mm-hmm. call out that this is not a prequel, this is not a spinoff, this is not a lesser version. They're mm-hmm. they're similar but equal works, each with their own unique pieces, and so far it's really felt that way, and I've appreciated that.
Yeah.
In my tradition of just going for the heaviest hitting thing I can find, I've gone for a meat cleaver knight.
Oh yeah.
And it's just this gigantic ass meat cleaver.
That's what I'm doing on my current playthrough, actually.
Really? Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah. So it's, and I just got the stats to wield it one handed. So that's my new toy that I'm mm-hmm. excited about. But yeah, if you liked Dark Souls, surprise, you'll probably like Demon's Souls, unless you're like me, whatever, 3 years ago and hated it. But
you know,
I've come around.
That's something that I've seen in the responses, is like at least a couple of people have said the exact same thing, which is Dark Souls was actually like excellent training to get me back into Demon's Souls.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the one complaint I have is basically like to listen to any of the episodes now that I'm through the tutorial in the Nexus. Again, talking Bonfireside Chat, listen to it. You basically have to have beaten the game. So it's like, I want to catch up with the show, but that means beating the entire game.
But,
so.
But you've effectively beaten the entire thing. Like you've gotten up to the Valley of Defilement. Like, and you did
what
them.
That,
so that's 5-2. I'm only making this assumption because you've said it, so it's not really an assumption at all. But you were playing through them sequentially before, right? So you were like right before, you know, the end game, and we're not doing spoilers on the end game, so you can totes like play it.
Yeah. I guess it's a matter of how much I remember. So I mean, I tried to do it sequentially, as in like 1-1, 1-2, 1-3, 1-4, and that didn't work out. So I think I was on some sort of pattern of 1-1, 2-1, 3-1, 4-1, 5-1.
Oh yeah,
and 2-2-2. So I guess I got a good chunk of the way into each one. So I could probably, yeah, I don't know. So my personal podcast listening strategies aside, I'm really enjoying the game.
Yeah,
and I don't think I would have appreciated it nearly as much if I hadn't have kind of gone through Dark Souls to get to it. And it's kind of funny because you know I just got to the end of the Tower of Latria, where you get this callback really, really, really clearly. Mm-hmm. Or it can't be a callback if Dark Souls came second. Or Dark Souls does a very very clear call forward to something in Dark Souls. So
yeah,
interesting stuff. Yeah, but it's good. I'm seeing it with fresh eyes.
Cool. Is that all we've been grinding?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's go then. Multiplayer. It's time for the multiplayer segment where we ask you to participate with us. And boy, did we get some responses. So I'm going to ask that we motor through some of these. Dennis, share with us what the question is.
Yeah, so this is about video game swag and not swagger. Mm-hmm. Stop that. Don't use that word that way.
No.
Stop using that word that way.
Your swagger privileges are revoked.
This is not also the acronym for stupid wild ass guess, which I've also heard it used that way. Stupid wild ass guess.
That's the worst.
Yeah,
that depresses me.
But this is just a swag. But I assume that everyone listening to the show has some form of swag from video games.
Yeah, marketing materials. And,
marketing materials or collectibles or, you know, it's all that stuff that just kind of. Surrounds video games that probably only someone else who plays them would get if they saw it in your house. So I just thought I'd ask, you know, who's got what do you like and why?
Yeah.
And man, do we get good response. So yeah. I'm glad we asked this one.
Cool. So I'll get us started and we can chime in with ours at the end. How about that?
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I like that.
Yep. So Robert Noakes says, I have a shirt that says friends don't let friends be gnomes. A guildie of mine sent me because I ran the Horde Guild. At least we're not gnomes. So I assume that is World of Warcraft. So taking a very firm stance on whether or not to be a gnome.
Don't be gnomist.
The answer is no.
With G-N-O. No.
I'm like just all my chickens are coming home to roost.
No, Dennis, the background that gnomes, one of the races, they're the requisite midget race, except that in World of Warcraft, whereas all the other races are medieval level, they have like ultra steampunk level super science. But a lot of people don't like them because they tend to be very comical, and they just kind of don't fit with the tone of it, particularly when you make one that's like, say, like a 2-foot-tall warrior that can like is just as strong as like an orc or you know, like an evil gnomish like warlock that's got pink hair.
I see.
So
can't you give any character in World of Warcraft pink hair?
Yeah, but it's sometimes more appropriate than others.
Yeah. It's like a no true Scotsman argument. No true pink hair. Yeah. Ben, what does Matt say?
The Kingdom of Loathing Feelies pack. I almost don't want to read the rest and leave it to your imagination, yeah. But it came with a Mr. Accessory, a map, a letter, some meat gems, and my favorite the aged skeleton keys. The keys just look awesome, and the whole pack just looks like it took forever to put together, which I understood it did.
Yeah. So our buddy's over at Kingdom of Loathing. Yeah.
Yeah. David, I think I'm going to have to ask you to explain this one as well.
Okay. Among other things, it's one of the things they sell in their store. I've actually been meaning to buy one for a long time, so there's a good chance if they still sell them, this will now have reminded me to do it. The biggest things that you need to know. Mr. Accessory is one of the important items in the game that you get for donating. Meat is what the game uses for currency. And I don't recall if they do this, but at least in game, you get a skeleton key by pasting together a bone and a tooth. So I'm not sure if these skeleton keys are actually like something straight up Lovecraftian or.
Yeah,
that's cool.
I'm trying to see if they still sell them because that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Their inspiration was a lot of the old text-based adventures, like was it Zork or whatever, would actually send you this when you ordered the game. Like it would come with, say, like a cloth map and
The cloth map is the canonical example of this kind of thing, or like usually it was for copy protection purposes. Like, you know, like what is the sixth character on the fifth row kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But
right.
Yeah.
And it does not look like they sell them anymore. So
no,
that is...
I'm looking at their merchandise as well. Yeah. I kind of want their shot glasses. Those look really neat. I'm going to close that before I end up buying something.
I've always wanted the bumper sticker that just says "I club sign seals."
A little bit. Like that, it seems like a good way to get your car keyed, though. So let me see here. Yeah, no. So this is something just related here. So we're doing like a fun pack of stuff for Watch Out for Fireballs, like just like a thing that you can buy. We're sending them out to people who backed above a certain level at our Kickstarter. Dennis, you're going to get one. But it's like bookmarks, postcard, buttons, stickers, and things like that. I'd be curious if people would want one of those for the level. We would need to get a certain amount of interest before we did that in order to make it, you know, profitable. But, if we did some things like that, let us know. That is a bit of an aside. However.
Yeah, we need a thing.
Yeah.
What should our thing be?
We need a thing. Let us know what your thing would be. Hey, Dennis, tell us what Dylan says.
Yeah, Dylan, he's saying it instead of asking it because this is not free play. Dylan says, my Killzone 3 t-shirt because I love wearing clothes.
Lol.
I haven't seen a Killzone 3 t-shirt, but I've seen increasing levels of Modern Warfare or Black Ops or, you know, some variant. Those t-shirts seem to be making the rounds.
Yeah.
Those and it seems like that and Assassin's Creed are the two... I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David, what's James say?
James says, I own a lot from working at Game Shop in my younger days. I have a remote control tank from Company of Heroes, a t-shirt in the shape of a bat for Arkham Asylum, and a hand warmer from Lost Planet 2 that went hard and warm after an endothermic reaction from boiling water. This one... I feel like I have a lot of reaction to. One, the tank thing, that's just awesome.
Yeah.
How did marketing ever justify spending that much?
Yeah.
For the shirt, I like to imagine that the shirt itself is physically in the shape of a bat. So it's more kind of like a pointy kind of like shawl type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the hand warmer, actually, like, I don't know if any of you guys played it. It's, you know, you're on an ice planet, and a big thing of the game is when you kill enemies, you, like, harvest their body heat to not freeze to death. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the hand warmer thing is actually really clever.
Yeah, no, that makes sense for the, you know,
Yeah. Game. They're coming out with a Lost Planet 3, aren't they?
I think it's already out.
It just came out. It apparently was not good.
Oh, sad.
Oh, well.
That was the first demo I ever downloaded for PS3 was the original Lost Planet.
Oh, was that one good?
It was, for the time, I was pretty thrilled, but that was, you know, I had just unboxed my PS3, so.
That was PS3 euphoria, yeah.
Yeah, they were pretty strong rose-tinted glasses there.
Oh, man. Nick Basile says, so much garbage from years past, but mostly I stick to interesting posters. Lots of the Club Nintendo ones are really cool and visually interesting. Now, he says. But the best is still the GameCube Zelda Collection bonus disc I got from pre-ordering Wind Waker when it came out a decade ago. 4 Zelda games on one disc, still a treasure of mine. That disc, like, I think when I was working at GameStop, it peaked in value at like $70, which is crazy for a used GameCube game. Like that is the holy grail of GameCube discs, I think. Like, even more so than Twilight, like the GameCube version of Twilight Princess, which you can't get. Yeah. So, you know, cherish that. And, like, you know, I don't know if you'd sell it to send your kids to college or whatever, but that is that is definitely something.
Yes. Rip off state, $70 admission.
Oh, man. Let's see here. Ben, what's GeoLol say?
Yeah, and by the way, happy birthday, belated birthday to GeoLol.
Oh, yeah, but, I didn't see that. Happy birthday, GeoLol.
Yeah.
I don't have much swag, says GeoLol, but I kept the MechWarrior 4 manuals. It was in the form of a field manual the main character had for years and had hand-scrawled notes in it.
Oh, like Fallout, yeah.
Yeah, or like the thing in Uncharted. Also, the mechs that were new to NW4, which I only assume he means is Modern Warfare 4, was sketched the new in the class. Back and had minimal info, as if you had seen them in the field and had to add them yourself, which was a neat touch.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to say, the most epic piece of swag I've ever owned was the animated Pokemon wristwatch that played part of the Pokemon theme song, and the alarm was Ash Ketchum saying, wake up, gotta go find some more Pokemon.
That is terrifying.
Yeah.
That's God, a sign. Go ahead.
That's a sign of an addiction. If like the only thing that gets you out of bed is more of that thing. So,
Ash is addicted.
The idea of like the manual or the book that has like notes scrawled on it is probably one of my favorite kind of, I don't know if you'd call that an aesthetic, but one of my favorite aesthetics, where like, hey, there's an original work, but someone has had the experience to say, okay, actually that's not accurate. Here's how you change it. And kind of the Wikipedia treatment before Wikipedia's time.
Mm-hmm. I just think that's you to House of Leaves.
Yeah.
I need to read it. I need to get my hands on like a physical copy. But like that I just, and the idea of like, oh, on the back of it, there's just like these hand drawn versions of these advanced mechs that like there's this like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I was just gonna say I'm already kind of a nerd for game manuals, and like that sounds like the mecca for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really.
Jeez. Come on, Dennis.
I didn't even realize. Shit, sorry.
It's fine.
Oh, man. Say that again?
I didn't think it was intentional.
No, it totally was not intentional.
Let's see here. David, what does Daniel say?
Huge advertising standee for Kingdom Hearts 3D and a small standee for PS1 Lunar Silver Star Story Complete. That's an awesome name.
Game too.
I've had several t-shirts that have disintegrated over time, such as Maximo and Max Payne. Yeah, that was actually mine as well, with the standees. I used to steal them on Cole's behalf when he worked on the video game vendor, which must not be named.
I want to comment on the name of that thing. How can something be lunar and star related?
You know, it's lunar, the silver star.
It's only very briefly before the moon, you know, kind of disintegrates and burns up as it strikes the star.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, so like people clamored for those standees. Like we would no sooner get one built than have like a piece of receipt paper taped to the back of it with somebody's name. Eventually, we started like giving them out at midnight launches, just because there was so much competition for them. I never really understood it because I don't know where people are putting them, especially the bigger, more elaborate ones, right?
Yeah. Although my favorite was Ben. Well, actually, all of us are. Our freshman year were. Had that room.
The dorm room?
The dorm room with the huge window where mm-hmm. you hung the Doom monster.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you remember the time the guy came into our room stoned out of his mind and explained to us that he was walking past the window and the Doom monster proceeded to step out of the window and chase him around campus?
I don't remember that, but I remember getting comments because we were on the first floor right by the main entrance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Life in a glass house. I would like to throw out a reference to Tyler and Ben Romer, also people who lived on that floor, would get giant movie posters since they worked at a movie theater at that time. My sophomore year, I had a giant standee Jumper poster for the 10 people that saw the movie Jumper.
With Hayden Christensen or whatever?
Oh, yeah. And Samuel L. Jackson.
Jeez.
They had that was when the Die Hard movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
So it was their entire wall was just his head. For a while.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I don't know. Standees, man. Let us see here. Dennis, what's Christopher say?
Yeah, Chris says, no real swag. The closest would be the stuff that came with the special edition of Fallout 3. I have the bobblehead Vault Boy hanging out near my desk, sometimes laying on his lazy ass because he broke off from the stand. It kind of makes sense that it was about as cheaply made as the government spent on half those vaults anyway. It's very meta right there. I like it. and the cool tin lunchbox that the game came in. I really like that one.
Yeah.
Oh. He goes on, I used to have a Tetris watch when I was a kid. It was so good that it wore out the battery in like 2 hours.
I've seen those before. Those are, I mean, obviously it's Tetris on a watch size screen, but come on, it's Tetris on a watch.
Yeah, pretty badass. The future is now.
Yeah. The future is today. Huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that I kind of wish that I'd gotten that Fallout 3 special edition just because of how neat it is. But I don't know. I like the idea of getting stuff from that, like, you know, physical versions of stuff that you get in the game. So, like,
yeah,
the New Vegas special edition came with like the sarsaparilla bottle caps and stuff. It's like, oh, neat. Like, I like that.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Or like the night vision goggles that came with, was it Call of Duty?
Yeah. Yeah. Or like the remote control car or whatever. Yeah.
Or the Ferrari that came with Saints Row 4. Yeah,
and with the plastic surgery. I'm so sad that was a hoax. Like, if somebody actually went through, it was a hoax. Not a hoax. Like Volition or whoever the ended up publishing that. The people there. They came out and said, like, yeah, we said that, but like nobody, like, don't try and buy it because you can't anywhere. So
it was
like a very special edition of Saints Row 4 where you got like a Ferrari, like a huge like vacation and plastic surgery and stuff. It was $1 million.
Like, I know no one's actually going to buy it. Yeah, and I know it doesn't really exist, but don't tell me that.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, just when somebody approaches you and says, can I have this? Like, oh, we're out, you know. It was an anonymous.
Or someone's like, I just mortgaged my house and took out 3 loans and I'm ready to buy it. And they're like, whoa, 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 whoa.
You done goofed. And finally, we have Murph Murphy says, I've got a Hitman red tie that's pretty nice. When I worked at an electronics boutique, I got an Ice Climbers t-shirt and a Nintendo Who Are You t-shirt. I don't know what the Who Are You is.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, too.
Probably
is that like
characters, like which character are you? Something?
Probably yeah. A CSI t-shirt.
Wrong song. Yep. So why don't we go around and say our favorite pieces? If anybody has one. Like, I'll do mine just because I've been thinking about it the whole time. Like, I worked at GameStop for like 8 years. And so like during the early part of my tenure, when I was like a high school kid who didn't have to worry about like his own space or whatever, like it was cool to take stuff home and be like, hey, neat, I've got this. But I quickly divested myself of most of it. So it's really hard for me to say like this is a piece of video game swag that I like hold dear without going into like weird non-answers of stuff that wasn't really marketing related. So like my old Sonic the Hedgehog doll that I have from like a little kid, that's one of my most cherished possessions because it reminds me of a misspent and lost youth. Or, you know, like, I really like my strategy guide, you know, collection, quote unquote, and, you know, things like that. So it's a little hard to say that. Like, I don't really have any posters that much anymore. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, I think the Sonic one is totally fair.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go with that.
Sure.
We can segue into mine because mine is a Shadow of the Colossus poster that I believe you gave me, Cole.
Yeah, when I was leaving the dorm, I gave it to you.
So that's why you don't have any posters. You just give them all away. Yeah.
That's a lie. I have a poster. It's a Silent Hill 3 poster, but I don't have a frame for it or something like that. So I need to get one so I can put it up.
Or you should put it in blocks like you did the Bender.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
that was a printout, though. Yeah.
See, here I thought this was going to be your was it Women of Norath calendar?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, from Outed. Champions of Norath. That was a really, really funny thing. I can't believe Sony made that. It was like a cheesecake pinup calendar of like different EverQuest characters.
What was it? The Final Fantasy 14 or whatever the MMO is just had some sort of weekend with special swimsuit drops.
Yeah.
And I was like, ugh.
Yeah. How about you, Dennis?
I have a pair of Guitar Hero 3 pajama pants that I like.
That's funny.
And it's just a print design with the Guitar Hero 3 logo and then the... for anyone who's played it, the like skull guy who's flying with the double neck guitar that's on all the loading screens. It's just like a print version of those two things. And it was a present, and it was like right when I was completely addicted to the game. So it was just the perfect gift at the perfect time. And and they're still around.
Yeah. That's cool. And how about you, David?
Honestly, I'm not sure. I mentioned the standees, I guess we're calling them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I've traditionally been too cheap to buy special editions. So, I don't know. I honestly cannot think of that much other than that I've done with that.
I'm not going to respect you less for not having stupid crap around your house. So, just so you know.
Yeah, you know, it happened.
Yeah.
Although I will say the one I think I am going to break down in order is that guy that makes the soapstones from
Dark Souls?
Dark Souls, those were really badass.
I've not seen those. That sounds really cool.
Oh, you haven't seen? Yeah, there's a guy that makes like necklaces that are, you know, look just like the various soapstones.
I was hoping it was actual soap and you could bathe with it, because that would be badass.
That's not what soapstone is.
Yeah. Now I actually need to see where these... Man, now I need to actually buy one. Fuck. and all of my Google searches just pull up wikis of like the actual items. Can you link me to that, David? Like, not right now, but like,
I actually thought like Gary or someone was the original.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll get to the bottom of it, but that seems pretty neat. I wouldn't wear a necklace of it, but it'd be neat to like put around my car's rear view or something.
Okay, here we go. Let it be linked.
Oh, it's Etsy.
Okay. I see what you did there. Linked the Dark Souls. No. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's only $18. That's pretty. Oh, and you can select your color too.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Neat. I like that a lot. So we'll put that in the show notes as well, just in case anybody else wants to be, you know, a patron of this. So yeah, if you would like to participate in future discussions of this sort, it's facebook.com/thelevel. There's a piece of business that I have not attended to. So a couple episodes back, I said, hey, if you email me, you know who you are. That was just to see who was cool enough to get this free thing that I was going to give away. However, the only person who emailed me was the person who gave me the code for the free thing. somebody emailed me and said, like, hey, I've got this code for the Humble Deep Silver Bundle to give away. I was like, okay, cool. We'll figure out a way. I was like, okay, so if I say this, let's see who bites. I was like, you've won just by being like, well, what's this all about? But
who is presumptuous and narcissistic enough to think when I give a cryptic statement that it must be about them?
Yeah, and I want to reward this behavior.
Dang it! How dare our viewers be so well adjusted?
Yeah. So, oh man. So if I can't, I've tried to think of a contest, but I like can't. So if you have a PC that can run these games, send me a message and, we'll get it worked out. First come, first serve on that. If you're listening here,
I just started posting codes to our Facebook page.
Yeah. I saw that.
if you're wondering whether or not I took your earlier, recommendation. So.
Cool. Yeah. So, want to button it up?
Sure.
Nah, I'm not talking to you.
Oh shit! That's right.
Dude, I can't do this, man. I can't do this.
It's too much pressure. Okay, guys. Ben's broken. We're done here. The credit. So I've got to wrap this up quick because I have another commitment to get to. However, I would like to thank you so much for listening to this show. If you would like to find more, go to duckfeed.tv. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating, review, check out old episodes, et cetera, and on down the line. Mention the Facebook. That really helps us out. If you're a fan of the network and other shows, and you're in the Pacific Northwest, let me see here, Saturday, October the 5th at 1:30, we're going to be at the Portland Retro Games Expo doing a live show about Mario Kart. So come see us there, and we are actually—I don't even know if we can announce what it's for—but we're preceding another really exciting podcast that's going to be recording. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to that in a big bad way, and you should too if you're able to make it. It's going to be a good time.
Possibly stupid question: is this all Mario Karts, the Mario's Kart, or is this a specific version?
We're focusing on the SNES one, but I don't think it's possible to talk about any of them without talking about the whole series as a whole.
So, sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Possible smart question: are you going to go to Rogue's Brewery while you're in Portland?
I don't know if we're going to have time. Yeah, I would like to though. It'd be neat. I like Rogue. I like Rogue beer. Rogue beer's good.
It is.
Yeah. Oh, well, is there anything I'm missing? The tip jar, duckfeed.tv/tip jar. Y'all are rocking it on the Amazon link. We get a little kickback from that. I changed the donation thing to go through the site as opposed to Amazon, so if that was stopping you, that is, and you know, we're not asking for that. We don't really need it, but that's there if you're interested. All right. Anything else I'm missing, you guys?
So check out other shows. I don't know if we need to name them here, but there's a lot of good stuff on the network.
Yeah. Something pretty much every day of the week. So, yeah. Yeah, so let's just do outros. My name is Cole Ross. I am at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I am Dennis Furia, at DFuria on Twitter.
I'm David MoneySmith, at MoneySmith777 on MySpace.
Okay.
Actually, Twitter.
Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on cool. Twitter.
Yeah, I don't have a witty outro. Thanks, guys.
Man.
My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Mysmith.
And you are listening to somebody open up a candy wrapper, I guess? Sorry.
Oh, did you hear that?
Yes.
I actually have a brace on my wrist. I injured my wrist.
Oh, so. I am very sorry to hear that, David. That sucks.
It's a injury I've literally had for like 2 years that I'm finally...
Oh.
Finally realized, oh, this isn't just like me getting old or whatever. This right. is actually maybe something they can fix.
Yeah. Well, you know, I could have told you that once I saw that there was bone exposed, but, you know. So, no, no. But you're listening to The Level, a podcast about minor wrist injuries.